All right, so I started with Empire of the Petal Throne, and I am Bob Flott. So is that a summary of what I said?
Yes.
Pretty much? All right.
My name is Ezrin. I'm a level 7 wizard.
No, I'm kidding. My name is Adam Swinder, and I represent the Pathfinder Society out of Blacksburg, Virginia.
Cool.
So I moderate for a living campaign. I have about 25 regular members, and I operate out of one gaming store, and we run about 4 tables a week, twice a week. So 2 tables on Tuesday and 2 tables on Saturday.
Is that Angel McCoy's old store?
Might be.
Shankin's old place?
Store? Fun and Games.
Fun and Games. That's Angel's old place.
It's changed hands about 4 or 5 times, and it's been around since the 80s.
Yep, it was there when I was just leaving tech.
Awesome.
So, which segues in, I'm Greg Porter. I started gaming at Virginia Tech in my freshman year, and it probably cost me a full point off my QCA by the time I graduated. my first game master was someone who was running a Star Wars game before there was a Star Wars game. He made up the system himself. And so we ran around shooting stormtroopers and doing things with the Force and just generally having a good unlicensed time. I started getting into the design part once I had enough experience to get fed up with genres that should be realistic but weren't. I was a player in the old Top Secret game, which was the first espionage role-playing game. And it was like, you know, what do you mean my character can close his eyes and shoot the rifle one-handed over his shoulder and do a headshot at 500 yards 95% of the time? You know, that sort of thing.
There's an app for that.
So you're one of those.
Well, that wasn't my character. That was like, you know, I could roll up a starting character who could do that. My character preferred high explosives. As an aside, the Top Secret had the most... I mean, it was fun, but I got like, wait, you know, I can write a better game than this. And it was like, you know, it was like, you are damned. So I've been trying to do that ever since. As an aside, Top Secret had the most amusing tables in it. There was the, you know, your super spy is caught by the villain, and we have the, you know, what happens to it. You know, the, you know, strapped down to a table with a laser thrown to the sharks and so on and so forth. And one of the execution methods, you know, the execution table, okay, your chance of escaping and what are the penalties if you do escape, you know, scars, that sort of thing. Okay, thrown to wild animals, chance of survival, pretty good. See the guard animals table for the type.
Pigeons. Pigeons.
Talking birds. Throw him to the talking birds. The other one was thrown from a height, which, if you were thrown from a very low height, your chance of survival was almost automatic. But you would suffer penalties to your intelligence and dexterity from, you know, from the damage.
You land on your head, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, yeah.
Yeah, it'll be fine.
And so it's like, oh, so what are you going to do? You know, villain catches it. What are you going to do? Have some of your henchmen shoot me until they run out of bullets, and then I'll just walk off. It's like, no, Mr. Bond, we're going to roll you off the curb. Because you roll him off the curb half a dozen times, and he's like, you know, Stephen Hawking, James Bond.
Hey, my brother got rolled off the curb once. No, I'm just kidding.
So, but I've been playing and designing since, not quite as long as you've been playing, but a while. Long enough that we've been acquainted for decades now. So
you wouldn't know it by looking at us.
Yeah.
We're both so young looking.
Yeah. Either you've been making a deal with the devil or you're dyeing your hair. I'm not sure. But
I don't dye my hair.
Okay, that answers that question. So, but I take enough of the time.
I don't make deals like Tick.
Began playing role-playing games in the very early 80s when I was in junior high. Not white box like some people, I'll name Bob Platt, but a second edition D&D. And then straight into the pink box Dungeons and Dragons, which they've recently come out again on dndclassics.com.
Is that the Companion Workbook? 8.5 by 11 box. Is about that thing?
Yes,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Where being an elf was a character class.
Yes. Yep. Basically.
Which,
basically,
you know, you think character classes are kludgy. That took that to a whole nother level. You think you're railroaded by having a character class. That's nothing compared to having your race and what you can do being a character class. That's just crazy.
Yeah, when you move on, you can become white class. I want to be half elf.
Yeah. Anyway, early 80s, D&D 2nd Edition was my very first game. We switched to the big box Dungeons and Dragons, which was D&D minus, you know, D&D for very simple people, which was awesome at the time. That was my first game that I ever played. Second game was Champions. One of the, I think without question, the longest running, continually published, successful superhero role playing game ever.
By some definitions of success.
I mean, I almost stopped game designing when Champions came out. I was like, this is just what I want.
It was exactly what I wanted for decades. People's tastes are different. Different people like different things. But I would tell you, for literally decades, Champions was my go-to game, and you really had to work to get me to play something else. I did play lots of other things. Sometimes once, sometimes a couple of times. But always went back to Champions for a long, 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 long time.
There's
your
segue.
And that's nowadays, segue too. Wait, no. But we'll come back
to. Now he has to back off that point.
But, okay, so let's see. Like most people who game obsessively, pretty much like by day three, you want to write your own game. That's just the way it goes. I mean, the people who don't are the exception. Almost everybody, by the time they've been played through a while, if they enjoy it and they want to keep doing it, they think, oh, I can do this better than that does that. It's just a thing. So that's
from there. You
that's how the industry grew.
And
that playing D&D said, I can do that better, and or I can use that to do space.
Yeah.
No kid.
That's literally how the industry grew.
And that's, you know, and anybody who has the time and the lack of life and the spare money to do it with has done it. And you can do it too. Anyway, went from there, wrote a bunch of games, actually published a couple. You've never heard of them, but it's okay. The first one I published myself was Legacy in early 1990s. It was Highlander ripoff, but nobody, don't tell anybody that, it's a secret. Because you can't tell by reading it. So if you liked Highlander, the first movie, and you thought, hey, I'd like to see a role-playing game like that. There's
Highlander,
there's a World of Darkness adaptation. It's actually quite good, but you have to like really Google for that to find it because it's not commercial. There's Legacy, which is long out of print, but there's another company going to come out with it. Or you can make up your own rules like I did. Then there's a lull of about 20 years, and then I came out with Bulletproof Blues, which is a superhero game, yesterday. So you're on the cusp of the next big thing. So there's that. Let's see. For my day job, I work for the Drive-Thru RPG, who also does Drive-Thru Comics, Drive-Thru Fiction, and just recently Drive-Thru Cards, which you can get cards. Apparently, people still play card games. I did not know. But and now you can sell them online. And so that's pretty cool. So that's what I do for my day job. So I'm one of the few lucky gamers who get to do in their day job something that actually supports their hobby. That's rarer than pretty much anybody in the game industry. And I use the word industry lightly.
As well you should.
It's kind of like calling the guy who sells hot dogs at the ballpark the hot dog industry. It's kind of like that, the game industry. Anyway.
So role-playing game industry to publishing is like ghettos. Homeless people.
Yeah. And, that's a long story, and I don't want to get into that. But anyway, that's me. Gaming forever, writing forever, publishing very intermittently. Still love role playing, and I do it for my day job.
Right. My name is Steve Long. I am a professional role playing game designer. I have co-written, or designed approximately 200 games or role playing game supplements. I got in my first game was the blue cover edition of Dungeons and Dragons 30 some years ago. Loved it. Just I got into it because I had started reading fantasy, and I heard about this on the radio or in the newspaper back when D&D was sort of an up and coming fad, and you would occasionally see articles about it. And I thought, well, that's, sounds really cool. And I found a store in town that had it that I could ride my bike to, and I got it, and it was just instant obsession. I would sit around for hours drawing dungeons that nobody ever played in that made no ecological or logistical sense, but I just had a blast.
And one of the people putting the dragons in the house that they can't get out the door.
You know, yeah. Okay. You know, I was just having all kinds of fun. I had a group of friends. This was in junior high that we would play. You know, this is back when, you know, we're junior high kids. We can stay up forever and subsist on soda. And so, you know, we'd get together at one guy's house over the weekend.
Yeah.
And, yeah, you know, we'd sleep over there and just literally play for practically 48 hours. We had a ball. You know, and then I started going to the local science fiction club. A lot more D&D playing there. Played a little Traveler. And then a guy showed up with a new game, a superhero game called Champions. And, well, that was pretty interesting. And I got into that. And quickly, all other games fell by the wayside. And that eventually, in time, led to me. I first started out writing some magazine articles for the company Hero Games, a published champion.
And Adventures Club?
Then, yeah, for Adventures Club. Yeah. And then I thought, after I'd written two or three magazines, I was like, hey, I could write a whole book. So I proposed a book to them. They liked the idea. I wrote it, and in 1993, it was published. So this year is going to be the 20th anniversary of my first book, Dark Champions. After that, they misspelled my name on the cover.
How did you misspell it?
You spell Stephen with a PH instead of a V.
Okay.
Stephen.
Yeah. But to their credit, they actually changed it with the second printing, and that is not cheap to do, I know now.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to pay, so I'm more grateful than ever that they did it. But then I wrote another 5 or 6 books for Hero through the mid-90s until it sort of went into, you know, a moribund state. I had by that point, but this would be 1997, 16 years ago, I at the time was a practicing trial attorney. And I finally decided, I don't like this very much, I'd rather try writing games for a living.
Nah.
I quit practicing law and became a freelance game designer. Did that for a couple years, then got a full-time gig with Last Unicorn Games, for whom I worked on their Star Trek games. That eventually led to working for Wizards of the Coast for 6 months after they bought us. And inflicted the Wheel of Time role-playing game upon me. You know, that then led to working for Decipher, where I wrote part of their Star Trek games and their Lord of the Rings role-playing game.
Yeah, they were big for a while.
They were very big for
a while.
They
were very big for a very short while.
They would still be very big if they hadn't basically had all their money embezzled and killed the company. But that then led around back to, in 2001, my business partners and I bought Hero Games, the company I'd started out working for, and for the past 10 years I've been the line developer for the company, and we've published in 10 years, 10 years as of last December, 110 books under this. So we've shifted to a different model involving Kickstarter, which you can hear about in the next panel if you like. But so I've been involved professionally doing this for 20 years now, either as a part-time guy or freelance or full-time. I still love to game. I'm in like 3 different gaming groups right now. I love to play all kinds of systems. My Wednesday night play by Google Hangouts group, in fact, ironically enough, to bring it all full circle, decided to try a game called Labyrinth Boards, which is one of the old school Renaissance games that's out now. And it's not the blue book D&D that I started out with the serial numbers filed off. They haven't even bothered to file. They just covered the numbers up in a piece of duct tape. It is literally almost identical. And it was just, I'm having a blast. It's like, I made my character up in 5 minutes. I don't have to pick any feats. This is amazing. You know,
and you didn't have to run software to do the character?
It's astonishingly liberating to not have anything to choose. And again, elf and dwarf and halfling are classes. And you know, there's just, my character is a fighter, and so all I do is hit people with sharp metal sticks. I have a blast. You know, the one difference it has is it does have a system for resolving uses of characteristics as impromptu skills or to do things that there are no rules for that I don't remember being in the blue book. And that's pretty elegant, actually, so it works out. But so that's roughly my history. I've written for most of the major games in the industry at one point. I've played a good many of them. And, you know, 30-some years later, I still love doing it. You know, I come into these things having a blast. I actually get to play at Bob's game tomorrow. It's the first time I've been able to actually play a game at a con in quite some time.
I'm seeing a thread here that reminds me an awful lot of gateway drugs.
Yes. Now,
every turn over the D&D, works the way up to champions, and then gives into the hard stuff, yes. Or maybe they just start continuing.
Well, that's,
you know,
the truth is,
that would make me
go on like champions users.
Yeah. Yeah. Most people, most people get into the industry or into the hobby through D&D because it's by far the most popular game, or perhaps now through Pathfinder. And but literally, the industry is built on people saying, "I can do this better." Who looks at Rollmaster and doesn't say, "This is a guy saying D&D combat is not realistic enough. I want to make it realistic.
This needs more tables."
Exactly.
Yes. Chartmaster.
Yes. Chartmaster. Exactly. That's all Rollmaster is, and it turned into a whole company. And but literally, your Traveler is, "Wait a minute, I can do D&D in space." Boot Hill is, "I can do D&D as a Western." And the whole industry grew from that. And
speaking of which, I think
the
first Traveler
books
are now available as free download.
They are. People who got into the industry like Bob did or into the hobby through something other than D&D, though admittedly a TSR product, or like my late friend Andy Matthews, who started with Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay, are a minority. You see a blip in that in the late 80s, early 90s, when the only other game in the history of role-playing to bring a statistically significant number of new people in the industry is Vampire.
Right.
Now, the problem with Vampire is that people who come in playing D&D often go on to play other games. People who came in playing Vampire did not go on to play other games, or for the most part, they did not. And you don't see that upsurge of a rising tide carrying all boats.
That's actually a really good point about Vampire.
True.
And that's probably worthy of an entire panel.
Yes.
So, I'll give you an example. My wife, Susan, who I've known since right around the time I started role-playing. Mm-hmm. Although we didn't like each other then. She was a girl. But she's played, I ran a vampire game for probably about 2 years with me, and it was a very small group, like 4 or 5 people in total. And she really loved that. She loved that. She had a great time at it. When that game ended, she played like one session of a space game I ran, wasn't interested in playing anymore. She played one game of a fantasy game I started running, that fantasy shit, she would call that. She played like one game of a champions game, because I was running champions back then, and she was just like, "Oh God, no." I mean, like, look at, she'd be like, "Come on." She'd hold up the character, she'd go, "Come on. Oh, I'm supposed to, oh, come on, no. All right, I'm going to go up in the back and watch TV. You guys have fun." And that was the end of her gaming. She doesn't game. She played vampires. She loved it. It didn't lead on to anything. That felt kind of weird. But that's just.
But no, it's the way it is. But anyhow, I'm derailing things.
Oh,
one more guest here.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm Rachel. I'm a member of a group called Tangent Artists, and I've been gaming since 1987.
Newbie.
I got to college. Well, I wanted to start in high school, and my friends bought me the AD&D First Edition Player's Handbook and Dungeon Master's Guide. The Dungeon Master's Guide, and I tried to start reading from the first page and figure out how you did this, having never seen a game, and it won.
Oh,
I was just like, I have no clue. So freshman year of college, I got there, my parents moved me into my dorm, they said goodbye. The first thing I did was I went downstairs, I found the bulletin board, and I said, "There's got to be a gaming group. There it is. When does it meet?" I was there. And the amazing thing in my experience is, it never occurred to me it would be weird to be a girl in game. Never occurred to me. I got into the gaming club, somebody sat me down and said, "So you want to play the game? Fine, you have an idea for a character?" And I was like, "Not really, I have no clue. How about a half-elf?" He explained things to me, and I was like, "I want to be a cleric magic user." He's like, "This is your first character." I'm like, "Eh, that's okay." So I was a half-elf and cleric magic user. Boy, did I know the spells really well. And my first DM was a woman, and half the players were girls. And it's been like that for me in every situation, almost exclusively. The most male-heavy game I was in was Champions game, but there were still several girls in it because it was the same pool of players.
So, so your group is single-handedly drawing down the average for the rest of us.
Yeah.
I keep finding them, groups that are half female, and it's amazing, and they're very into the role-playing.
I know two or three other people who have that same story.
Yeah.
So
I hear all the horror stories, and I'm just like, I feel so sorry for you that you didn't find an awesome group.
I feel sorry for me, too.
Yeah.
But, so I started with AD&D first edition. We moved to second edition. I've tried, I played Champions quite a bit. I actually wanted to.
All the best people do.
About to start an urban fantasy campaign.
Excellent.
That's what we're using.
Hero. I just finished writing the Monster Hunter International role-playing
game. Mostly because my brother's like, if I can't play hero, I'm going to explode.
Your brother's a man of intelligence
and
taste.
Let's play hero. Because I was looking at many systems and trying to pick one, and I was like, okay, well, you can do anything with hero, so fine. We'll use hero.
No, that's a fact.
It's a fact. I can tell people anything. I've tried Call of Cthulhu and a little bit of Rollmaster that didn't last long, unfortunately. We tried to play Lord of the Rings using the full Rollmaster rules. The GM didn't know it worked very well.
Character generation, day 3.
Yeah. Oh man, we had a guy with the computer back in the late 80s that did the complimentary skills for you. And the character sheet was like pages and pages off the print. You had to go through and highlight which skills you actually had any
kind of
points.
It's pretty sad when you're comparing it to Champions and going, well, Champions is a lighter game.
Yeah.
You know? but the truth is, it's, you know, to not to get all political, but to quote one of Ayn Rand's novels, you know, a complex system that works is invariably found to have evolved from a simple system that
works.
And Rollmaster early on is incredibly simple because it's just, here are a bunch of charts to make combat more realistic.
Yep.
And then they're like, well, we can apply that principle to spells. We can apply that principle to character creation. And five years later, there are like 50 classes for character creation, and you have to take a 200 level college course to know it all thoroughly. And I like Rollmaster, I'm not ragging on it by any means, but there's games, everybody has their own level of interest and taste.
Yeah. I mean,
some people want complexity, some
down.
People want ease.
I mean,
some people
Aftermath and your space opera and...
Wait, Aftermath, the game that had rules for stopping when you ran. The game that had rules for the nutritional value of cockroaches.
Yes.
Space opera, where your character was like, you had to roll d20 84 times.
Yeah. Or Early Traveler, where your character could die.
Die during character creation.
Yeah.
Yes. Or I suppose it's called where your character would die right after character creation.
That's true in space opera as well. I went and spent an entire day with a guy who's going to run space opera. And we finished by the end of the day. It's like 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock at night. Okay, I've got my character. That was as far as that game ever. Because it just crazy.
We've moved to simpler things, although, we can look at Hero and say simple is relative.
It totally is relative, though.
Well, no, I've still got my original, little first edition champions, and I've also got the level 2 body armor
staple
Hero.
You know.
But, it's the same system. Like you said, a good complex system is derived from
the
system.
The original champions book was 64 pages long and included a moderate amount of genre information, and the 6th edition book has no genre information, is only rules, and is borders on 800 pages.
Yeah, but you keep
and
it's
split in
two, edition,
right?
Like,
No, the 6th edition is larger, but it becomes in two books.
To be fair,
one of the reasons that I deliberately had to pad the second book to make it a little bigger, so that they wouldn't look out of sync. So it doesn't have to be that long. I threw a lot of extras in there.
Extras,
own and publish a game that appeals to people who want a lot of detail. It's not the same market necessarily as people who want to play Pathfinder or Fate or Space Opera. It's just, there are different people want different things out of their game. And
that's okay.
That's the fun part. That's the reason why there are hundreds and thousands of different role-playing games rather than just D&D.
Yeah,
Ryan Dancy's efforts to the contrary.
GURPS.
Yeah,
absolutely. It's worth mentioning that him and me and just about everyone else, we are technically competitors, but I like his stuff.
I like good stuff. I've played tested some of Greg's games.
Yeah.
The truth is, while yes, to some extent there is competition in the game industry, by and large, a lot of it is a rising tide is going to lift all boats. Interest in gaming eventually spreads, that has a ripple effect or a trickle-down effect or whatever you want to call it, to help a lot of companies. If you bring in a lot of new people, eventually that spreads out. The problem with gaming over the past 20 years is that, with the exception of the vampire people who don't buy other games, no new people are coming into gaming, or at least not enough to counter the number of people leaving it because they've gotten old and have to do things like deal with kids and jobs.
Or they switch to WoW.
That's where I
come. Or they switch to playing WoW. The truth is, for 90% of people who might play role-playing games, World of Warcraft provides 95% of what they want out of games and is ridiculously easy. You don't have to get a DM. You don't have to get a group of people together at the same time unless you want a raid. But you can just sit down at your computer for 2 hours anytime you want and play WoW, and you're getting the same thing you would get out of first edition D&D. WoW is nothing but first edition D&D with a different paint job.
Yeah,
it literally is
hack and slash.
That.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's I was a total addict for 5 years.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. No, I play WoW hard. I mean, like 8 hours a day, 12 hours a day at times. But it was helpful to me for two reasons. One is I started playing out of professional interest. What is this? What are these things? I should know about them. I'm a game designer. And I found I really liked it. Some friends convinced me to try it who were computer gamers. You know, but I kept with it, not only because I enjoyed it, but because learning about this game form is important. You know, when it reaches the point that computers are intelligent enough to act as GMs, we're all going to be working for that. You're not going to need to get people around a table anymore. And it turned out actually, and so you know, the great part is, as a game designer, I can write the game off and the monthly fees off on my taxes. They're research expenses.
You can tell
you. Yeah. And yeah. Nice. But it actually became incredibly handy when Game Studios came to us in 2007 and bought the Champions IP to create Champions Online.
Lifetime subscriber.
Yeah.
Yeah,
same here. I just didn't have to pay for it. but the truth is, had I not played WoW, I would have been adrift. I wouldn't have known what they were talking about. And with my background in WoW, I knew exactly what was going on when they said what they wanted to do and started asking me questions. Because during the initial design phase of the game, the designers were constantly calling me and saying, we need a character who does this. Who do you have in the Champions universe with roughly these powers? And because I knew that there was a point when they were working on the Star Trek game that I actually knew both of their IPs better than I would argue anyone in that company.
But they've got a certain format and structure that they're trying to fill out.
They absolutely
do. So they're trying to find things that fit into
them. They do. That's why, you know, Atari bought Cryptic. Atari did not buy Cryptic because Atari was in love with Champions Online and Star Trek Online. Atari bought Cryptic because Atari was in love with the processes and software Cryptic had designed to efficiently produce MMOs.
Yeah.
That's why Atari bought Cryptic.
Cryptic City of Heroes.
Yeah, initially.
Yeah.
Can we stop and say what these initials are that you're...
MMO?
Okay, MMO is IP.
Oh, intellectual property. I'm sorry. It means when I say
we're
they bought the Champions IP, what I mean, they bought the characters, the settings, the events, the history.
Okay, and then that was what?
Massively multiplayer online role playing game.
World of Warcraft.
The role playing is extremely arguable.
Yeah.
But it's definitely massively multiplayer and online.
Lots of
game.
People go and play online together rather than one person playing against the computer.
Okay.
That's what it means.
It's social.
Yes.
You know, not.
Demented and
it's
sad.
It's as social as you want it to be.
Yeah,
like when you start playing World of Warcraft, they set aside a server you can go to that is role-playing heavy.
Where you're expected to stay
as opposed to, I just want to get through and fight.
Yeah. And when I played WoW, I played exclusively on a role-playing server, and I had an awesome time.
I never tried one of those, honestly.
Well,
I never did. Yeah.
Well, it...
You were
a lot more serious
well,
about that.
I went to servers where friends were already playing.
I
went to servers where friends were already playing.
Because that's just me.
Yeah.
Still in kind, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I was never really interested in WoW. Friends got me to try City of Heroes. So that's the first one I tried.
Yeah.
I was enjoying that, and the fact that I could solo a war team, and I wanted to hang out with people or not.
Yeah.
Then Lord of the Rings Online came out, and I was just like,
I did not dare get into Lotro because I knew it would...
Well, there are various servers.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, the role-playing server?
Yeah.
Gee, I wonder where all the other Tolkien will be.
Yeah.
I'll just sign up onto that one right now. And I enjoy the fact that you can have very different experiences in different MMOs based on the server you're on and the MMO.
That's absolutely true.
Because I hear horror stories constantly about the... I don't know the actual chronological age of the people, but the... 13-year-old maturity level people trash talking constantly on WoW and having channels.
That's less of a problem on the role playing.
But then it's less problem on the role playing service because you tend to get a little bit of an older crowd and more of a crowd who has done tabletop games.
Yeah.
And then I go over to Lord of the Rings and I'm on the role playing server and it's just like, people don't buy with it. Like,
I can give you a perfect example of that actually.
This is Tolkien's work. We're really nice to each other.
In World of Warcraft, in World of Warcraft, if you are a serious player, you maximize the effectiveness of your character. You min-max is the gaming term. So you're making specific choices, and there are many websites devoted to what is the best way to spec out your mage or your shaman or your warlock.
And they deliberately change the rules every six months
so
or
so you have
to force you to relearn the game.
Yeah. They do. But the thing is, so if you are a serious, if you are a serious WoW player, you have to make these choices, or you get left behind. You're just not as powerful.
Right. People pay money for this too.
They do.
Okay.
The thing that impressed me about Champions Online when I started playing it, Champions Online has a much more flexible character creation system. You can pick and choose powers, and for the first time ever in an MMO, I would hear people would say, "You know, what's the best power for this?" And in game chat, somebody would suggest the maximum effectiveness, blow things up quickest option. And somebody else would say, yeah, no, you might not want to do that. I skipped that power because it didn't fit my character concept. It's the first time I ever heard anybody in an MMO say, build to a character concept? Wow.
This is
a step forward.
I saw that a lot of City of Heroes had the same.
Yeah, they did.
A lot of the same stuff.
I didn't play much City of Heroes. I tried it.
I think it was a lot of the same crowd.
My problem with City of Heroes was, you start out and you're fighting thugs who are snatching purses on the street, and you work your way up to higher level crime. But on your way to the higher level crime, you keep passing by these constantly spawning mobs of muggers.
And you want to?
I can't stop and kill them.
I would do that too. Stopping you blow up a crowd of muggers just because.
Yeah.
I have friends who let their 5-year-old play City of Heroes because he thought it was so great, and he did nothing but go around and beat up the muggers.
Yeah.
Although they once came and caught him in an arena. It was PvP battle with another player, and they're like, "Oh, he wasn't supposed to go in there." They're like, "Oh, we're so sorry. Our 5-year-old was he's not supposed to do this." And the guy was like, "Well, don't feel too bad. He was winning."
Yeah. there are always going to be games like this, whether they're tabletop role playing games or MMOs, that are going to appeal to the people who want to be able to min max their character and be as effective as possible. And there are always going to be games that are going to appeal to people like many of the modern, what are called indie or storytelling games, that are going to appeal to people who really want to get into in-depth role-playing. It's not saying that one can't be the other. I've been in Pathfinder games that were all about the min-maxing, baby. I've been in Pathfinder games where we didn't care if we had the most effective items in each slot. We were just having fun playing our characters. So it's how you approach it. But certain games tend to dictate certain ways. Pathfinder tends to deviate more towards maximize the effectiveness of your character. You know, Dogs in the Vineyard is wholly about defining what your character is like.
That one, you don't actually have to describe that for anyone to understand.
That's a fringe case, though.
It's one of the most successful of the modern indie role playing. It's a game set in a fictional version of Mormon Utah where you are playing an enforcer of church law. And one of the basic rules of the games is whatever the player characters say is the law is the law. So it's following the law is not the game. The game is how do you react to having this power? How does it affect you? What is your rationale for imposing it? And I was in a game once where two of the player characters were arguing, and one of the characters in the town said, "Well, you guys are handing out the word of God, right?" And we're like, "Yeah." "Well, why are you arguing about it?" And one of the guys who was in the argument said, "God hasn't made up his mind yet."
Solid K, the RPG.
Yeah, there's one of those. Right?
Yeah.
That's a complete separate game, but it's one of the wonderful things about role-playing, and yet one of the maddening things about it from the point of view of either marketing a role-playing game or trying to find a group is that it appeals to an incredibly diverse array of playing styles.
Yes.
As I've said in more than one of these seminars, there is no one gaming market. There are 1,000 gaming markets, and your goal in creating a product is to try to fill as many of those niches as possible. Because the truth is, any 3 gaming groups are probably going to have 4 different gaming styles.
Yes, my current gaming group, we've got the actor, the writer, and the min-maxer. So the min-maxer is always concerned about, is this character the most effective I can make him, and so on and so forth. But he knows that the rest of us are not that concerned about that, and the GM is more interested in telling the story. But we take his advice. He advises us. Maybe you should choose this feat. It might be the best because he's analyzed it.
So let's bring this back around. Let's have the snake bite its tail for a little bit. So why do we do this? So why do we role play? So why do we play these games?
Because it's fun.
Because it's fun. Because tabletop gaming is friendship. I've made friends through role playing that I wouldn't have for life. These are brothers and sisters.
I wrote about that in the introduction to the 5th edition. My best friends are all people I've met or know through gaming.
That's true of me as well, actually.
And on top of that,
best man at my wedding I met through gaming.
Gaming is community.
I know a lot of people.
I like the human element. I want to be able to see the people that I'm gaming with.
Yeah, that's definitely what tabletop has over MMOs. us.
Yeah. That is why
that's why I'm my Wednesday night group, we play on Google Hangouts, and it's a great way for us to get together despite the fact that none two of us live in the same city.
Absolutely.
It's not quite as good as sitting around a table together, but it's pretty damn close.
We have my two brothers.
Is that a text, audio, video?
No, it's Google Hangouts, so we have audio,
text,
and video.
It's like Skype.
It's just like Skype.
My two brothers come in through the PlayStation Network. And then one of our other members is on Skype on somebody's tablet.
Yeah.
And we're all sitting around, and we had to make the rule that snark must happen on Twitter. Because otherwise no one can hear what anyone else is saying because of all the different devices. And, but it's working.
The whole game is going to
Google Hangout on Skype, but it doesn't horf all over itself when it tries to do more than two people at a time.
Yeah, no, Google Hangout, we Google have five and six people, and it's never crashed on the
system. I know,
time.
I love it. It's
we're
great.
Waiting until they finish. There are a couple companies working on... you know, utilities for playing tabletop RPGs, so specifically like Tabletop Forge is, I think, one of them. And we're waiting until one of them gets a beta to the point where it can actually be tested to see if that will improve our gaming experience. But so far, just talking to one another, it's no different. The only difference is you can't put a map down and show it to people if you want to do that. But you can hold up illustrations and say, this is what you see.
Yeah. Well, what we did in the Call of Cthulhu game, I played it. The Call of Cthulhu game I played through Google Hangouts was the fellow who was running it had a website, as you do, and he would just upload the image of the map, and you just like refresh it, and he'd change something and refresh it, and I think he was actually prepared,
yeah.
And that helps a lot. But basically, from my point as a player, you know, I would just alt tab to the browser with Control 5, and it would refresh, and I'd go and then we run away. But, you know,
the other great thing about it is it lets you, it gets around the trick of you can communicate individually with the GM. You know, what you used to do by passing a note, which alerts everybody that you're talking secretly to the GM, and nobody will ever know.
I used to do that in D&D back in the day. I pass the GM a note that says, this note means nothing.
Yeah.
But everybody around the table would go, ooh, because this was early D&D for me. I can't speak for everybody, but for me, early D&D experiences. The players were not necessarily all on the same side.
I was playing a character who was he was paranoid about his personal security, and the two other players, who was my girlfriend at the time and another woman, one of them passed a note to one another saying, "You know, have you seen? You know, this was when Bambi had been released. Have you seen Bambi yet?" And she wrote back, "No, let's drive Steve crazy. I think there's some." I immediately passed a note to the game master explaining the 10 steps I'm taking to counteract any possible move against me.
Yeah.
And they're doing nothing but try and this is going to be so funny. And sure enough, when they finally reveal it, they just fall over laughing, and I'm just sitting like,
God. And I've done the exact opposite. As running a game, I have turned around and written out a nice note and passed it down and said, whatever you do, don't react to this note and pass it right back to me.
Yes, I've had GMs do that. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's very effective.
We've got like 5 to 10 minutes before it ends.
Yeah.
Let's open up.
This has been fun. But
I have a question for the audience. Okay. Ostensibly, the topic is beginning gaming. Is there anybody here who does not already role play on a regular basis?
Have you actually learned anything?
You two guys, and I say guys in like
the nicest possible sense.
Hey, you guys, kind of a sense. Is there something that you came to this hoping to find out or learn? Because I'd like to know that, and so we can help you with it. You first, you're in the back.
I mean, mostly just how to play some of the games that were out there and how to get a game started. Like, I'm sort of peripherally familiar as a geek.
Let's start there.
Go to your local.
We have an expert. Yeah.
Go to your local game store. Find somebody who's wearing this polo. Talk to him and or her, and they will provide you the game, the 4 hours of entertainment that you so desire. That is what I do. I am prepared.
Now there's more.
Indeed. Do you want to know a secret of life? Secret of life, right now. This is going to blow your mind.
42.
Almost. Just multiply it by 3, divided by 9. So, humans want things. What do humans want? It boils down to about 3 things: food, transportation, and entertainment. Humans want to eat, they want to go around places, and they want to be entertained. I am a purveyor of entertainment. These people are purveyors of entertainment. 8 hours per week, I provide entertainment. You are rated as a human being by other people. I don't care how nice of a person you are. I don't care how not nice of a person you are. You are rated as a human being by how you provide those 3 things. So I entertain people, and people love me for it.
I've often said, you know, my job is to help people have fun. I'm not providing the entertainment, I'm helping them entertain themselves. And on that basis, I've racked up so much good karma that I can kick a puppy every day for the rest of my life. But the great thing about my job used to be getting into arguments with people. I was a trial lawyer, fighting over money, basically. My job now is literally, I'm helping people have fun. I'm not passively entertaining them. I'm helping them use their imagination to entertain themselves. But he's right. If there is a good local game store, that's the place to start.
To the point, what would you say? How would you suggest finding a game group? How would you get going?
Well, first I'd say, not only does he's allowed to kick a puppy every day now, but thanks to the Hero System, he can tell you exactly how far it'll go. Well, I'm doing almost all my stuff online now. So, and there are gobs of places. Every company has a web page.
Usually a message board with a player finder forum where you can say, I live in Roanoke, anybody around playing this game, I'd like
and
to play
a free sample version of the rules to download and go, yeah, this is something I can understand, I can get into this. And you're like, okay, superheroes or fantasy or science fiction. You think about what kind of setting most interests you. What kind of movies do you go to as a good guide? It's like, you know, I want to do, you know, I like Bruce Willis action flicks, okay? That's sort of a modern thriller kind of thing. Yep. Star Wars, space opera, you know, Lord of the Rings, Hobbit, fantasy. You know what floats your boat, that's the sort of thing that you would probably enjoy playing the most. So, you know, Google is your friend in that regard.
Just be careful searching online with some stuff, because I had a friend that was really into the X-Men and went and did a Google search on X-Men.
Oops.
And did not get the result that he thought he was going
Philippe
to get.
Yes.
I'm feeling lucky when you put
it. Yeah. Now, as far as finding new people, if you already have a game in mind, then what he's saying about going to their forum, I will say this: the two best player forums I personally have ever seen, speaking from my considerable years of experience, are the Champions Forum, because the players there, it doesn't matter how esoteric or how stupid the question, somebody there will have an answer for you that is interesting and helpful.
Yes.
There will be some people who are not as interesting and not as helpful, but somebody there, probably several somebodies, will give you a thoughtful, interesting, helpful answer. And that is also true of the Mutants and Masterminds website. Those two are probably the best forums for that I personally have ever seen. As far as finding new groups, if you don't already have a game in mind, meetup. There's a role-playing meetup group in most major cities. It tends to be, nowadays, very Pathfinder-heavy. Because Pathfinder seems
the reason
to be...
Why Pathfinder is the dominant Pathfinder game right now, the reason why I wear this polo and I purvey entertainment to hundreds of people is because of meetup. I met people through Meetup in Kalamazoo, Michigan, when I was living and working there for 2 years. They were playing Pathfinder Society. I was like, oh, Pathfinder. This is like 2010. Yeah. Ooh, I haven't played Pathfinder before. It's like D&D 3.5. And then I probably got killed in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And I was this is awesome.
So the deal is, if you do a Meetup thing, chances are it'll be very Pathfinder heavy. I mean, just statistically speaking, it'll be Pathfinder heavy. Like we were saying earlier, except for Vampire. Which is this weird kind of... I love Vampire. I'm not saying it's bad. It just has a weird kind of self-contained kind of
I
want
to make a point about
society.
Vampire. Vampire doesn't go from game to game. Vampire goes from table to LARP.
Yeah.
That's what I've noticed.
Lots of LARPing.
You know,
they go from table
LARP
to
live action.
Yes.
Yeah, I knew that one. Thank you.
But Meetup is a way to go. And even if you don't think that Pathfinder is your thing, or you're not really super into fantasy, at least it's a way to meet people. And like I say, all my best friends that I've known for 20-odd years, I met them all role-playing down at the local comic shop 20-plus years ago.
And just because they play Pathfinder at the current time doesn't mean they don't play other games.
Exactly.
You couldn't talk them into another game.
Exactly.
This is almost heresy to say, but it isn't about the game, it's about the interaction with your friends.
That is not heresy.
The rules are bad regardless of the rules based on the people.
Don't get too hung up on, I download the rules and I didn't understand them. Don't worry about it. If you're interested in that genre and you found a group of people that you think you might want to try a game with, the game I'm currently in, there's me and the other guy my age who are the old-time gamers, and there's the one guy who's a rules lawyer, and everyone else there has never gamed before.
And the most of them cannot tell you any of the rules, and it doesn't matter, and we don't care. They're like, what do I need to roll? It's there on your sheet. They're just having fun role-playing their character. What do you do in this situation? Oh, well, I'm going to do this. Yeah. Okay, and it's the GM's problem to figure out how that works in the game. It's not your problem. You don't have to even worry.
Terminology. Rules lawyer means somebody who takes that book and reads it cover to cover, tens times.
Uses the rules to his advantage. My current group has three gamers who all have 30-plus years of gaming experience, and two gamers who have probably 10 years, and two gamers who have never gamed before. And so we end up creating their characters. They don't want to learn the rules. We create their characters for them. We tell them what to do, and they just have a blast playing along with us. And it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, some of the best sessions that I've ever run or been in, we played the whole night, and the character sheets just sat there, and the rules never got open.
Yeah.
I mean, because it's just about, you know, when once you know what you're doing, it just flows.
Yeah, it's nice that GM has an entire city adventure worked out, and the first thing that happens in the night is one character turns to the other and says, "Hey, you want to get married? Okay, sure. Oh, crap, now I have to plan a whole wedding. He's going to get tossed out the window, and we're going to go do our own thing." The GM has had to roll with it.
Perhaps
the
best adventure I ever ran was in my Dark Champions campaign was... The player characters were upset because they were crime-fighting vigilantes. There was another vigilante who was taking things too far and earning them a lot of bad publicity, and I had rules for how that affected them in the game. And they didn't want it. There was what was called the scorecard, and if the scorecard went above a certain number, the National Guard was going to be called out, and their jobs were going to get... Right, because they were having bad publicity. So there was one game session where they decided, we have got to find and stop this guy. They recruited all the NPC vigilantes in the city, and we spent 4 hours role-playing... How do we get along, and how are we going to find this guy? And with me constantly switching hats, playing all the NPCs, and then tracking the guy down and killing him, and the shooting him was almost an afterthought. The fun of the game was.
Yes.
But you just went straight to shooting him. There's no like. There's no like stern
him.
Warning.
You're vigilante.
Letter to follow.
No. This is a guy whose idea of vigilante crime fighting was to bomb soup kitchens and welfare clinics because he thought poor people were a drag on society.
Hey, it'd be right.
He was not a jockey. He was a serial killer. But the public associated him with the other vigilantes, and therefore the media was looking on them unfavorably. And literally, they sat down for 4 hours. We did nothing but talk through this and then decide, okay, where have all his crimes been committed based on the map of the city? We assume, A, he doesn't live in these areas. He lives in a nice part of town. How would he get from the nice part of town to the bad part of town? He goes through here. How do we track him? And look, for 4 hours, it was nothing but talking. No dice were rolled.
Yeah.
No characters
were
rolled.
We're all sitting
very,
in this room drawing lines
point.
On a map.
Yeah.
And
you can play through these games without rolling dice.
Yeah.
And really enjoy the game.
Yeah, some games, I mean, and there are some of the modern storytelling games involve no dice roll at all,
yeah.
And no GMs.
We each push our own systems, but in the end, it's
system
the adventure.
Is
yeah.
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 And another
I think we've all learned at this point, there's
I
no perfect system.
That's why they make more than one flavor ice cream.
Keep writing,
you know, if you like strawberry, good on you. You like strawberry. Did you have a question? Because I don't want to leave here without at least answering another question.
Well, yeah. Since this is gaming for beginners.
Well, in theory.
Okay. I don't
We're
want
trying.
To get into something really complicated where there's a lot of complicated rules and character building and everything.
Yeah.
Is there some names that you could throw at me of some games that I could like start and see on?
Any of
them.
Wait.
His is an extremely thick one, but you can get a easy,
no.
cheap, I mean, a free download.
Fudge,
she's not going to want to play Champions.
Fudge,
Pathfinder Beginner Box,
yeah.
$30.
Fudge is one of the simplest games out there. It uses three-sided dice.
Fate's where I was going to go because that's where most
Fate's
of your
slightly
commercial
more
games
complicated
are.
Fudge, and they're doing a kick. They just finished a massive Kickstarter. So there's like a new rulebook coming out.
Yeah. Fate.
I would also
look for Fate.
And you can download. It's going to be open. It's like open source and free.
Yeah.
You don't need to buy the books. You're going to be
able
to download.
I don't need to charge any money for it after all the original Kickstarter. I would say some of the old school Renaissance games like Labyrinth Lords or Adventure Conquer thing.
And that right there, when they open the door, is our signal to start wrapping up.
Yeah, extremely easy. Yeah, we are just about done.
Actually,
if any of you have any questions throughout the weekend, we will absolutely be happy to stop us in the hall and ask.
If you haven't noticed, they like to talk about role-playing.
I've got a friend who's going to be starting a Wheel of Time game.
Okay.
And I couldn't help but notice your mentioning of the inflicting on you.
Let us just say, I am not a fan of Robert Jordan's writing.
Okay.
Designing the game was interesting, except that I didn't get to design the magic system the way I wanted to. But it took me almost 2 months of working time to get through the first 8 novels. There were only 8 at that time.
Right.
Only 8?
Yeah, only 8.
Was this like 100 years ago?
Yeah.
But if you like Robert Jordan, you probably like that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, okay. If you like Robert Jordan, I don't like his style of writing. Taste is taste. If you've read the books, you'll get when I wrote the rules for character creation, I wrote in a whole bunch of feats that could only be taken by female characters, and would only work if you said something insulting or deriding to a male character. And of course, they cut all of them.
Yeah. Oh, and that wasn't
be perfect.
Well, no, but it would be perfect. But they cut all of them.
Cards, if you'd like one.
Yeah.
Or a webcomic.
Thank you.